They don't say God's changed my ways, changed my ways, those evil. So I set out, cross that way, strike them down to make them pay, change their ways, their evil ways. But I can't.
Welcome back. Top of the third hour. What are the strings? Look at the Kaffirs. Are there MOUs, MOAs, memorandums of understanding and agreement? What are the strings? Where does the corn pone? Where is the corn pone? Where does it come from? Anyway, we'll come back to that. We're on the phones. We have Fred in Iowa on the line. The second website you were going to give, Fred. Go ahead.
First one was the dark intentions of public schooling. And the second one is, I'll read it off real fast, and the Prussian connection of American schooling. The Prussian, P-R-U-S-S-I-A-N, the Prussian connection of American schooling. And that'll give you something to do over the weekend. And I've got a damn good reason why I'm putting this on. We're going to understand why we are so ignorant. And this goes back a long ways, but when our school system started to change in 1852,
yeah.
Now...
Jefferson's bill for the
But these websites, you're going to understand. You're going to understand. And then we can come up with solutions and what to do. We'll understand why we're so damn ignorant and why we talk about our kids and the millennials and all that. Well, each child belongs to the state. I'm reading this off of internet here. Of education are entitled to look upon all parents as having given hostage to our cause. And the guy that said that is coming up here. Horace Mann. Okay, I'm not going to take forever on this. An international figure and leading Unitarian of his day, the location of the meeting house is not entered in the minutes, nor are the names of the assemblies participants, apart from Channing. Even though the literacy rate in Massachusetts was 98%, and in neighboring Connecticut, 99.8%, the assembled businessmen agreed the present system of schooling allowed too much to depend upon chance. If encouraged more entrepreneurial exuberance than the social system could bear. In other words, I'm giving all this is in it was natural. Businessmen, oh, I lost that. Anyhow, I'm taking up time here, but it is so important. We can go in that. We can understand why we're ignorant. And even the cream of the crop, your callers and listening audience, we can start understanding why we are ignorant. And I'm not being derisive or derogatory about that. You have the cream of the crop of callers. You are the cream of the crop of RBN. But we've got to get to solutions and get the information that we can go A, B, C, D, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and get to the bottom line of things. What it amounts to in simple terms, it's a battle of good and evil. And the evil side, well, the ultra leader is Satan himself. But the evil side is to kill Christ, do away with Christ. And when we can get, when they can, and they damn nearly did it, when they can get rid of the Word and the Bible and Christ, and it's almost happened, then they've won.
Yeah.
The king of this earth right now, on September the 24th, 2015, spoke from the balcony of our capital. And that's what I'll get to in time. But we can start to understand if we have the courage. And I'm going to add one more thing. You can read the Bible till the cows come home. You can have all kinds of letters and before your name, PhD in theology and all this. You cannot understand the Bible with intellect. The only way you can is by the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
And that doesn't mean, I'm not trying to say that you have to be unintellectual or an idiot or a low IQ. Far be it. The Bible will increase your intellect. Now, my energy level's down. I've yapped on here enough. Bless everybody, and talk to you later, Chris. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Fred. Much appreciated, as always. Just to echo some of that a little bit, you know, it's interesting. I mentioned recently Jordan Peterson's book list. If you go to jordanbpeterson.com/books/book-list, you can see his 15 books that he thinks are, you know, that he, as he said, found particularly influential in his intellectual development. The Bible's not on that list. And there are some, you know, curiosities like Nietzsche and Jung in particular. But to Fred's point about, you know, where does this, from whence does this evil derive? Jordan Peterson has the video segment, tragedy versus evil. What's the difference? There's a distinction. And he's been, you know, this discussion has been something that he has been asked to speak about specifically, but makes the distinction. And in the video description, it says, it is very useful from a psychological perspective to understand the distinction between tragedy, an inevitable consequence of limited being, and evil, the production of suffering for suffering's sake. Such knowledge can help reconcile people to life and aid them in choosing the correct path as they move forward. So a couple of, you know, just sort of subtextual observations. First of all, most of what should be ascribed to evil in America is ascribed or dismissed as tragedy, generally speaking. There's a conflating that happens there. But also, to Fred's point, it's interesting the subtle, nearly imperceptible, certainly to most, ongoing effort to do exactly what Fred was talking about, and to basically do away with these fundamental concepts, you know, from whence does evil derive, essentially. And that's a broader discussion. You know, I always think of, you know, people ask this question. It's somewhat silly and foolish, I would say, in the majority of contexts. You know, how could a loving God, blah, blah, blah. You know, go read the book of Job and see in the last chapter, the last verses, Job 42:11 is what I always think of. Then all his brothers, Job, and all his sisters, and all who had known him before came to him, and they ate bread with him in his house, and they consoled him and comforted him for all of the adversities. You know, people say, does God take responsibility? Well, Job 42:11 to me is the answer to just about all of those questions. They consoled him and comforted him for all the adversities that the Lord had brought on him. So, anyway, it's obviously a bigger, broader, deeper philosophical discussion, but Fred makes great points. And, you know, as far as the, you know, understanding the Bible is concerned, I have maintained for a long time that you gotta, you know, you can read it, obviously, but 1 Corinthians chapter 2 spells it out. If people have read it and it doesn't make sense and you see these misinterpretations of things written by people historically, the place to start, if you genuinely want to understand it, is by inviting the Holy Spirit into the reading. Because 1 Corinthians 2, I mean, I call it the secret decoder ring. You know, you got to get the secret decoder ring. Because 1 Corinthians 2 spells it out, basically, starting in verse 6, yet we do not speak wisdom among those who are mature, a wisdom, however, not of this age, nor of the rulers of this age who are passing away, but we speak God's wisdom in a mystery, hidden wisdom which God predestined before the ages to our glory. The wisdom which the wisdom which none of the rulers of this age has understood, for if they understood it, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory, but just as it is written, things which eye has not seen and ear has not heard, and which have not entered the heart of man, and all that God has prepared for those who love him. For to us God revealed them through the Spirit, capital S. For the Spirit searches all things, even the depths of God. For who among men knows the thoughts of a man except the spirit of the man which is in him? Now this, you know, gets into modern technology, and I still believe this is... Anyway, that's a whole separate discussion. Anyway, for who among men knows the thoughts of a man except the spirit of the man which is in him? The CIA wants to know his thoughts, right? Even so, the thoughts of God no one knows except the Spirit, capital S, of God, capital G. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, so that we may know the things freely given to us by God, which things we also speak not in words taught by human wisdom, but in those taught by the Spirit, combining spiritual thoughts with spiritual words. But a natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them because they are spiritually appraised. And this next bit is like the, I don't know, Rosetta Stone of not just this, but so many things. We have been encouraged, speaking of the evil, and again back to 2 Chronicles 7:14, we're encouraged to have intermediaries, liaisons, interlocutors, someone in between us in whatever form and facet of life, and the rightful authority figure. Probably most often, and particularly in this context, our maker, our creator. So verse 15 says, but he who is spiritually appraised, but he who is spiritual appraises all things, yet he himself is appraised by no one. For who has known the mind of the Lord that he will instruct him? Which is a reference to Isaiah 40. But we have the mind of Christ. So it connotes a personal responsibility on everyone's part. and accountability, and that gets back to Exodus chapter 20 and the Israelites saying, you know, when Moses says, come on, let's go talk to God, they all say, what are you, crazy? You talk to us, lest we perish, because of the evil in their own hearts. They were convicted, which is why I think 2 Chronicles 7:14 in particular, you know, turn from their wicked ways is sort of the operative concept there. We have so many things, so many ways in America in which people have been conscripted to evil, like I was saying earlier, that we should depart from, should cease and desist. And, you know, that's part of the reason why I've called it Jonah's Gospel for years. Jonah walks through town, set out a day's journey. The Bible says Nineveh was a three-day journey. Did he make it a third of the way through town? I don't know. Whatever the case, word got back to the king, and there was a mass, revival, you might say. Wide-scale repentance from the king down to the lowliest subjects, and Nineveh received a stay of execution. So that is something that would be, we would all benefit from that in America. All of these devices that have been given to us in this technocratic scientific dictatorship, all these fun addictions that are actually mind-numbing and soul-crushing and not actually fun, which is why we have to go from one to the next to the next to the next. We played that clip of Jaron Lanier yesterday. In a similar fashion, you know, AI is, what it means is it's a term for venture capitalists, buzz term. In a similar sense, you have those kinds of things happening in technology and pop culture, you know, appealing to the addiction to the dopamine feedback loop, the cybernetic totalist feedback loop that has been engineered generationally. All of that stuff should stop. You know, not to get too far afield, but if people put their devices down, just go outside and realize, people would quickly realize, I think, a couple of things in particular: how weak, anemic, how crippled people have become. You know, and anemic, I mean in a sort of social, emotional, spiritual sense, not in a physiological sense. But that, and also how bored they've become because of this hyper-stimulation. You know, in pseudology, Dr. Dimitri Christakis is interviewed, and we should probably play that clip because I mention it from time to time. But it's from, he's interviewed, but they also play a clip from his TEDx Rainier talk. And we've played the opening remarks where, you know, people don't realize that in addition to what Fred said, you know, the Prussian model, Charlotte Isserby has told us a lot about that. Horace Mann's hijacking of Jefferson's bill for the more general diffusion of knowledge, that concept, and subverting and perverting it. In addition to that, now in this scientific dictatorship era, people don't realize how these things that we're told are good, baby Einstein and this kind of stuff, is actually destroying young minds permanently. It rewires their brains in a very deleterious sort of fashion. So maybe we'll play that from Dimitri Christakis' TED Talk back
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
When you were here before, you couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You flow like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so very special, but I'm a creep. I'm a widow. What the hell am I doing here?
Welcome back. I think we will play that clip. Dimitri Christakis on the video is titled TEDx Rainier Dimitri Christakis Media and Children, with a brief remark there at the beginning, but if you're ready with that, go ahead, please.
I am a pediatrician, a researcher, and a parent, and I became those things in that order. And the reason the sequencing is important is because even though I was a doctor who took care of children for a while, and I was a researcher who studied ways to keep them healthy, it wasn't until I became a parent that I got interested in some might even say obsessed with, early learning. It was 14 years ago when my son was born, and I took a month paternity leave to be with him in his third month of life. And now,
okay,
in retrospect,
brief,
as a pediatrician, I should have known better because I opted for the
brief
time.
Can we pause? Okay. So, two things. First of all, sequencing is bad guy speak. Sequence is the more appropriate term. And third month of life is disingenuous. That's, you know, just to get back to what Fred was saying. I hear people say a lot of times, you know, when does life, whatever, you know, life begins at conception. No, it doesn't. The Bible tells us, the Psalms in particular, repeatedly tell us that God knew us before the foundation of the earth. He numbered every hair on our head. It's a very important distinction. Life does not begin at conception. That is a misnomer. So, you know, third month of life, not so much. Even if you, you know, there were the 9 months, you know, in the boy's mother's womb, you know, anyway, not to get too far afield again, but point of clarification. So anyway, without further ado, here's the rest of that. Go ahead, please.
I am when colic crescendos. And I spent that month with him in a snuggly, bouncing on a big blue ball and watching more daytime television than I have in my life. And noticed that he was actually interested in it. As much as I like to believe that my two-month-old was following CNN as closely as I was, it was obvious to me that he wasn't. And yet, something about that experience was important to him. Now, why do these early experiences matter? The typical newborn brain is 333 grams. And in the first 2 years of life, it actually triples in size. It's an extraordinary period of brain growth, unparalleled over the life course. And you can see that here. Here is both brain growth over the lifespan, and you can see how steep the rise is early on. And it continues to grow until about age 20, and I'll let you guys in the audience find yourselves over on the right there and see why you had such a hard time finding your car keys this morning. Now, we're actually born with a lifetime supply of brain cells or neurons. That's not what actually grows. It's the connections between those brain cells, what we call synapses, that account for that brain growth. And those synapses form based on early experiences. If you will, the mind is fine-tuned to the world that babies inhabit. And to give you an example of that that you can all relate to, any child born anywhere in the world can learn to speak any language fluently. But if she isn't exposed to certain sounds early in the first few years of her life, she can learn to speak another language later, but she'll never sound like a native speaker. So a baby born today in mainland China, as amazing as it is, can learn to speak fluent Mandarin. But if she doesn't hear English sounds early in her life, she can learn to speak English later. But as we all know, we know such people, she'll struggle making certain sounds. It wasn't because she wasn't born with that capacity. It was because her early experience didn't condition her mind to learn them. Now, this graphic actually shows just that. What you see is the brain, and you see the neurons and the synapses connecting them. We're born with about 2,500 synapses. By age 3, we have 15,000. And then over time, those connections are actually pruned in response to the external stimulation, the external world that we live in. Now, to give you another example of that, this is the breathing pattern of a one-day-old infant listening to music. And you can see here that he's listening to Mozart, and then Stravinsky is put on, and then Mozart again. Now, I show you this not to present some kind of an infantile critique of classical music, but, and those of you in the audience who are classic music aficionados might have a hypothesis about why Stravinsky did this to his...
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
It's the good life, full of fun, seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel. You won't really fall in love, 'cause you can't take the chance. So be honest with yourself, don't try to fake romance. It's the good life to be free and explore the unknown. Like the heartaches when you learn, you must face them alone. Please remember, I still want you. And in case you wonder why, well, just wake up, kiss that good life goodbye.
Welcome back. Bottom of the third hour already of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. It's Friday, April 19th, 2019. I want to give you a little bit more, a few more minutes of Dimitri Christakis' TED Talk. Listen to what he says and think about, are we doing more of the bad things, or, you know, and less of the good things, or vice versa? What's happening today in America? Go ahead, please.
breathing pattern. But the point is that even at one day of life, there's a discernible physiological reaction to what babies are actually hearing. Now, we know from decades of research that too little stimulation early on is bad for brain development. I show you here two PET scans. Now, PET scans are measures of brain function. The brighter colors show more brain activity. And on the left is a PET scan of a normal kindergartner. And on the right is a PET scan of a child who was raised in a horribly neglected environment. This is actually a PET scan from a child who was raised in a Romanian orphanage and was profoundly neglected early in life. And you'll notice that there are areas of his brain that show no activity at all. It didn't develop as a result of too little stimulation. Now, this is a horrific example of too little stimulation and the untoward consequences of it. But the question we've had in our lab for some time is, what about too much? Is it actually possible to overstimulate the developing brain, or more appropriately, to inappropriately stimulate the developing brain in ways that are actually not beneficial but harmful? And this is important because we're technologizing childhood today in a way that's unprecedented. In 1970, the average age at which children began to watch television regularly was 4 years, like this cute little girl here. And today, based on research that we've done, it's 4 months. It's not just how early they watch, but how much they watch. The typical child before the age of 5 is watching about 4.5 hours of TV a day. That represents as much as 40% of their waking hours. Which brings us to Baby Einstein. Now, many of you probably have not seen Baby Einstein, but I will show you a random 20-second clip from Baby Einstein Day on the Farm, and here it is. In that 20-second clip, there were 7 scene changes, about 1 every 3 seconds. It's about the most exhausting day on the farm since John Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath. And of course, it's nothing like being on a real farm, right? Adults watching this find it discombobulating because your mind is trying to make a coherent narrative out of this, and there is no coherent narrative. It jumps all over the place. But babies aren't trying to make a coherent narrative out of it. They're not capable of doing that. It's all of that screen change, all of that stimulation that's keeping them actually engaged in the screen. So we've had for a while what we call the overstimulation hypothesis, which is that prolonged exposure to this rapid image change during this critical window of brain development would precondition the mind to expect high levels of input, and that would lead to inattention in later life. So you watch enough Baby Einstein Day on the Farm as a baby, and when you go to a farm as a school-aged child, it's boring. It's too slow. How come there's no sheep suddenly popping into my face? How come there's no marionette going back and forth? Why do I have to walk from here to there? That's the general idea, that you're conditioning the mind to that reality, which doesn't actually exist. And we tested this some years ago, and what we found was that the more television children watched before age 3, the more likely they were to actually have attentional problems at school age. Specifically, for each hour that they watched before the age of 3, their chances of having attentional problems was increased by about 10%. So a child who watched 2 hours of TV a day before the age of 3 would be 20% more likely to have attention problems compared to a child who watched none. Now, what else did we find? We found that the more cognitive stimulation children received, and we measured cognitive stimulation in terms of how often parents read to their child, how often they took them to the museum, how often they sang to them, we found that cognitive stimulation reduced the chances of attentional problems later in life. In fact, each hour of cognitive stimulation reduced them by about 30%. So if you will, these are two sides of the same coin. There are certain things that we can do early on in our children's lives that enhance their ability to pay attention, and certain things that we can do early on that actually impede them.
There you go.
Now, if our
what's going on today in America? Technologizing childhood in unprecedented ways, Dimitri Christakis said. That was 2011. So I ask, better or worse today? rhetorical question, obviously. Verizon wants, Apple wants, everybody wants to, you know, here's your child's first device. You know, it's specifically set up for your child, and it's going to be fantastic. Facebook wants to, you know, give families FaceTime opportunities and nonsense like that. The overstimulation hypothesis he talked about, preconditioning the mind for hyperstimulation. And, you know, you think about that in conjunction with all the technology, the video games and the AR and the VR and all of that stuff these days. And, you know, imagine, I mean, you're creating your own, what do you call that in marketing terms? I forget. You're creating your own demographic, basically, your own predefined marketplace. You know, some people call that a blue ocean. You know, you created your own ocean, basically. Anyway, overstimulation hypothesis, preconditioning the mind for hyperstimulation, conditioning the mind to a heretofore, I would maybe say, non-existent reality. And it is non-existent. But, you know, speaking of technology, the same folks creating that stuff want to create all of this other technology that those overstimulated minds gravitate toward, right? Creating attention problems, as we heard Dimitri Christakis talking about, which consequently coincides with what I call the four horsemen of the health apocalypse. Same thing, you know, we're engineering ADHD. So what Fred said is bad. And then you have all of these other forces that are conspiring against the individual from inception and, you know, from the womb, quite literally. And I think that's unfortunate. Last thing I'll say on this sort of, I don't know, contextual note or whatever, Walter Martin, you know, how many folks remember Walter Martin and the Christian Research Institute as it begun under his leadership? Chuck Missler used to talk about Walter Martin and the Christian Research Institute before Hank Hanegraaff, and it's never been the same since Walter Martin passed away. But you know, talk about a crusader defending the gospel. If you're not familiar, look up, go watch some of the, you know, those little snippets you can find on YouTube. Read The Rise of the Cults. I think if folks put together, you know, if you're interested, an interesting read and topic of fodder is Walter Martin's The Rise of Cults. And, you know, you hear about this stuff and you start thinking, but why, where did all this stuff come from, and why, you know, I mean, why around the same era, why suddenly this outcropping of, you know, these kinds of things? And there are lots of things that we could say or talk about there, but I think a companion of that would be to sort of address the why. How did this happen? Why all of this new agey kind of stuff and the you know, the Galatians 2 Judaizers legalism kind of thing, and all of these, you know, essentially cults that lead people away from the orthodoxy of the Christian faith, if you will. A companion would be Gary Kaa's work, for sure. And specifically, Gary Kaa's The New World Religion, published back in 1999, that to me is one of the best reads that I've ever come across. Pretty fantastic, you know, and again, he's one of those guys who had a real eye-opening moment as a government official who, you know, was not aware, it seems, of what Anthony Sutton had written. And was asked to give his preliminary opinion. Actually, I don't want to spoil it. You know, for those interested, just read it, and you'll see what I mean. He had a very eye-opening experience in the government, and not, you know, we hear one thing publicly, kind of like Charlotte Isserby. It was a similar experience. I always think of those two as similar experiences. You know, you're a patriotic American. This is what you think, and what's actually happening behind the scenes or below the surface is, well, basically the entire opposite, the polar opposite of what we hear. So that's interesting. So Walter Martin, and I guess Gary Kaa, The New World Religion as a companion. That's interesting stuff. I want to get back to this character, this guy. I think he's dangerous. Pete Buttigieg, I think he's extremely dangerous. And I think, you know, the issue of homosexuality is a red herring that is intended to keep people from talking about the real issues. And there are some real issues. I think there are issues of corruption. I think it's interesting. So we go back in his history, and I'll make this brief because we're coming to the end of today's broadcast. But just looking into his background, from his, I'm just going to go from the Wikipedia page and see if this doesn't get your mind sort of wondering, like, what is, that's curious. There are some curiosities, I think. So, attended Harvard College, majoring in history and literature. While at Harvard, he was president of the Harvard Institute of Politics. So, obviously an interest from early on, right? Harvard Institute of Politics Student Advisory Committee, and worked on the Institute's annual study of youth attitudes on politics. You know, mover and shaker, wants to shape policy, etc. He wrote his undergraduate thesis on the influence of Puritanism on U.S. foreign policy as reflected in Graham Greene's novel, The Quiet American. Upon graduating from Harvard in 2005, Buttigieg was awarded a Rhodes Scholarship, and in 2007 he received first-class honors in philosophy, politics, and economics from Pembroke College, Oxford, later promoted to a Master of Arts. So that's interesting. Then he worked as an investigative intern at WMAQ-TV, Chicago's NBC News affiliate. Worked as an intern on several campaigns, Jill Long Thompson's unsuccessful 2002 congressional campaign. Worked in D.C. as conference director for former U.S. Secretary of Defense William Cohen's international strategic consulting firm, the Cohen Group. You see these connections being made. Spent several months working for John Kerry's 2004 presidential campaign. After earning his Oxford degree, he worked as a consultant at McKinsey & Company. That's an interesting place. 2007 to 2010. Commissioned, and so then, you know, here's what's interesting. After all of that education, this is an interesting, to me, seemingly non-secular, at least I think to the average unassuming observer, left turn in his life path, if you will. Commissioned as a naval intelligence officer in the Navy Reserve in 2009 and deployed to Afghanistan in 2014. After a seven-month deployment, he returned to South Bend. Okay, so what happened? Remained a lieutenant, Naval Reserve until 2017. Skipping down, served 7 months in Afghanistan as a lieutenant. This is what happens when you're not one of those Manchurian candidates. This is the sort of, you know, counterpart to when, you know, what's his name? Not Tashfeen Malik, but the other guy. When the FBI sends folks, or the CIA sends folks to the hills of Afghanistan or wherever, Pakistan or somewhere, to so that they can later say, oh yeah, see, he took a trip. But you guys knew because you sent him there, so why aren't you being honest about that? Anyway, so Buttigieg served for 7 months in Afghanistan as a lieutenant in the Navy Reserves, returning in 2014. While deployed, he was assigned to the Afghan Threat Finance Cell, a counterterrorism unit that targeted Taliban insurgency financing. So ask yourself, what's going on there and why? Isn't this a curious sort of left turn in his pedigreed career path? Why is he a Navy intelligence officer in the Navy Reserve? And Navy Reserve, 7 months in Afghanistan, Afghan Threat Finance Cell, counterterrorism unit. That's kind of weird, don't you think? I think it's extremely peculiar and suspicious, personally. I'll finish the thought on this nonsense when we come back. Stick around. More right after this break.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back. And for people, before I finish this thought, for people who don't understand what's going on here and think, oh, this is, you need to start, if you're not familiar, study some of the influential folks throughout the 20th century. Some of the names that we mentioned during yesterday's broadcast and folks like Samuel P. Huntington, Francis Fukuyama, who sort of picks up where Huntington leaves off. Alvin Toffler, Amitai Etzioni. The intellectual, you know, the philosopher king types. And people who influence guys like Pete Buttigieg. Anyway, including his dad and Antonio Gramsci. So, you know, I would say he is a very, you know, close adherent to Saint Simonian doctrine. Basically, people will tell the masses whatever they want to hear, and then others among the masses what they can tell them to get them stirred up and off point in Saul Alinsky Rules for Radical sort of fashion, get them off balance so that they pose no opposition, and then, you know, round up all of those masses that Hayek talks about in The Road to Serfdom, Chapter 10, Why the Worst Get on Top. So, gave a little bit of background, but here is the thing that really sort of gets me scratching my head. You know, Dave in Wisconsin mentioned the other day the Naval Intelligence background of Pete Buttigieg. It's not the Naval Intelligence background per se that bothers me or troubles me so much as the timing. I think he's extremely curious. And the fact that a Naval Reserve lieutenant would be assigned to the Afghan Threat Finance Cell Counterterrorism Unit. What? How did that transpire? Doesn't that sound weird? I mean, so basically the CIA is once again vying for the White House. You know, the last time that the CIA had a career intelligence man in the White House was what? 41, I think, so about four presidencies ago, but I digress. Anyway, from the section Wikipedia entry for this guy, Mayor of South Bend, first term. In 2012, Buttigieg demoted South Bend Police Chief Daryl Boykins after a federal investigation found the police department had improperly recorded telephone calls. Tell me if it doesn't sound like there's something that we could read between the lines. Buttigieg also fired the police department's communications director, who had discovered the recordings but continued to record the line at Boykins' command. Police communications director alleged that the recordings captured four senior police officers making racist remarks and discussing illegal acts. Buttigieg opted to settle suits brought by Boykins, the communication director, and four officers in court, or out of court, excuse me. And he used the wiretap, Federal Wiretap Act, to his advantage, but contradictorily. And we're out of time, so I'll leave it at that. Anyway, I hope you have a great weekend. I hope it was informative. And I hope nothing bad happens over the weekend with the Columbine nonsense in the headlines. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.